everybody. This is Whistle Radio 102.7 FM, and I'm Charlene, your host for Off the Top.
So I'm with Angela Chrysler, and Angela lives in New York, so we are very lucky today to have Angela on our program Off the Top. Angela, you were just discussing with me about an article you wrote a few years ago regarding cats and cat lineage.
Yes.
Tell me how you started into that article, what it was that inspired you.
I was a temporary writer for the Critter Comic Chronicles magazine. I wrote about 8 articles for the magazine, and it was finding something new or a different approach to the article once a month every time I had to submit a new article. And I'm a cat lover. I've always had them around me. And I've always been fascinated with watching each litter of kitten come up and how they related to the last generation. And I started recording it through photographs when I was a child. It started when I was 12. And I was about 27 when I started writing this article. I called it Bloodline. And I was able to just recollect the last 20 years of lineage passed down from one cat to the other, markings. One of them was a Maine Coon. The other was your traditional domestic short hair, and how each generation had some sort of traits with shape, tail, length, right down to personality sometimes, and how that was similar to each other. It was just quite extraordinary. So I went ahead and wrote this article around it and put together the photographs that I had collected over the years.
That's incredible. You had this opportunity to keep a view of what was going on with these animals around you, and your memory was so keen you were able to remember enough detail to bring in personality, markings, and boy, I'm a cat person as well. Cats all through my life, and that goes back a lot of years, and I really understand they are totally different in their personalities, are they not?
Very much so.
Yeah. So you got that article published. Was that your first published article?
It was not. I did have 3 others prior to that published. One of them did go into Ipeachy, who is the white short-haired that I have now. She's now 18 years old.
Okay. Wow.
And yeah, she's wonderful, absolutely wonderful, sweet kitten. And she had a weight issue a while back, and I wrote about her having her weight issue. I think that was the first article I wrote about her.
Oh, I see, yeah. And then you went in and wrote about the lineage, or was that prior or after?
It was after. Then about 2 articles later, I wrote about the lineage.
And what I really want to know about is your history as a novel writer, because you've been writing books. You have at least one. You have 3 books, I believe, we're going to talk about today. Is that right, Angela?
Lisa, yes.
So the first book is called Broken?
The first one, out now, is Solar and Shadow. Second one is due to release on September 11th, and that is Broken. And I have Bane that I am working on now and should be released in winter of 2015.
Boy, you are a real worker when it comes to writing. Do you have a regular schedule?
I do. Usually, I start around 7 o'clock in the morning. It depends. If it's a school day, I usually get around to it at 8, and I work until about 5 o'clock at night. When I'm in the middle of a project where I'm vigorous about my writing, then I can pull 12-hour days, or I'm writing from 7 to 7. Sometimes I get up at 5 a.m. It really depends on where the kids are for school and what's going on as far as where I am in the project.
Boy, that's an amazing accomplishment to have 3 kids, and they're not older. They're still at an age when they would need you, right?
Very much, yeah. And there's a lot of breaks I have to take.
You must take those breaks. Do you think that if you didn't have the kids with you, you would just keep writing 18 hours a day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I did go through a period, especially near Dolor and Shadow's End, where I was no longer working at the full-time job that I had, and I had the rare luxury of being able to stay home and be a full-time writer. And Dolor and Shadow by then was already 5 years in work in progress. I had 2 more years. I didn't know it then, but I would have 2 more years to work on it. And that is all I did for those 2 years. Full-time was working on Dolor and Shadow. And there were nights where my husband took the children and did what he could with those while I completely applied my time and efforts into Dolor and Shadow.
That is extraordinary. That's an intensity around writing that is very seldom seen for a lot of people. Now, you call your first book, and I have the order wrong, but I got the names right, Dolor and Shadow. What are those words about?
Dolor, it's actually funny how I came up with the title. When I was done with Dolor and Shadow, it was actually Lord Lenoland's Lies. And Lord Lenoland is the name of the city, one of the cities in the book. And the book was 270,000 words long.
Wow.
There was a lot. Agent had taken the time to advise me, and one of the things she came through with was telling me to cut the book in half. So I took her advice, and I found about three optional stopping points. And I chose a stopping point that kept the word count around 50%. It was tricky. I settled on 160,000 words. And Lord Lenoland's Lies was moved to part two of this monstrosity. And I had to come up with a name for part one that was fitting. I had to revise a little bit of it to develop the arc into a certain flow and introduce a problem conflict that wasn't there prior because my one part arc was now cut in half. So I had to introduce a smaller arc, show the climax of that arc and the conclusion by the end of this first part to make it its own story. And I was planning at the time of going traditional publishing, and I had heard many people report back that when you go traditional publishing, the editors change the name of the book. So I gave no effort whatsoever into naming Dolor and Shadow. I wanted to call it Pang and Shadow or Sorrow and Shadow, but that really sounded more like a romantic title.
Yes.
And that worried me because it's, even though there is definite romantic element in the book, it is clearly an epic fantasy. So I wanted to go with something that attracted more of a fantasy reader. I pulled out a thesaurus and found Dolor, which very simply means sorrow. And the shadow is actually in reference to grief, which is really the book's theme, is dealing with suffering and grief and accepting death. That's really what one of the themes of the book really focuses on. And I settled on Dolor and Shadow. And within a week, it had stuck, and I had grown very fond of the title.
Wow, that's a very interesting story to do with how that came into being. I'm amazed by a couple of things. One is that you wrote a book of 270,000 words. That's, by itself, that's an amazing accomplishment. And it doesn't surprise me that, now, is this your agent who told you to cut it in half, or is this an agent who you know and who gave you that?
It was actually neither. It was a random agent I had queried to during the looking for a literary agent stage, and she had taken the time out of her busy schedule to advise me of her own accord. Absolutely grateful for that.
And she must have liked your work, because agents very frequently will not give you kind advice and so forth, because they're so busy. They just kind of slip it to the bottom of the floor and send you a form letter. So she must have been taken by something in your writing that told her that she wanted to encourage you to go further with it.
Yes.
That must have felt very good. So tell me more about the actual publishing, how you came away from the idea of traditional publishing. As I understand it, you're deeply into self-publishing.
That it was very, very hard. I think all writers get to this point in their lives where when they decide to be a writer, the first thing they imagine is Barnes & Noble and seeing their book on one of the shelves. And I was right there along with them, having this dream of walking into Barnes & Noble, pointing to one of the books and saying, that is mine. I was really hung up on that idea. And there was an unspoken war going on, conflict, I should say, between writers, self-published and traditional publishers, or traditional authors, where it was one or the other, and there was this massive branding against self-publishing where only the, and this is horrible, but only rejects went with self-publishing. That was the rumor that I kept hearing about, and it was a subject that in the forums was tiptoed around. So I'm very proud of what I did. I called the white elephant in the room for what it was and said, we're going to talk about really what self-publishing is, and it was a huge topic. It brought up a lot of emotions. Everyone was very mature about it. Everyone was very, very responsible and respectable. It was a 20-page forum conversation with about 60 writers all putting in their perspective and what their views are. And one of the writers at the very end of this conversation came to me and said, we had this conversation about 2 years ago, and he showed me the forum link, and I looked it over. 2 years ago, there was name-calling, there was beratement, there was slander, there was a lot of ridicule towards the indie publishers. Today, it was eye-opener. It was sitting back and really reflecting what our options were. And one of the things I had said during that conversation was, I felt myself becoming prejudiced against indie publishing, and I don't believe in prejudice. The world is way too small for that to exist anymore. So I wanted, before I got too more close-minded, I wanted to examine all options. By the end of the conversation, I realized that traditional publishing is very much about business. A publisher and agents are 100% about a business. It's not about artwork. And they run their products very much like a business, which is great for when you want to really put something out there. But the catch is, when they look to take on an author, it is a gamble. So they tend to only invest very much like a portfolio in the stock market. They will only select authors who almost give a guaranteed money back profit, which unfortunately is very, very few authors. So unless they can get that guarantee, they pass up some really great artists. And I've heard horror stories where an author will be taken on by an agent. They'll find a publisher. 2 years later, the publisher and the author will part ways because they just did not agree. The contract did not go the way they wanted. There was one author I had heard about where he was signed on with poor publishing, and they parted ways, and he self-published because Tor had asked him to do some things he did not agree with his book. They did not agree artistically, and they parted ways on a very cordial note. I realized in 2 years I can sell an awful lot of books, but I do not need a traditional publisher, and this is huge with indie publishers. We like to have a lot more control over what happens to our book, artistically, where it goes and directs. And the other thing I was noticing, this was really a huge part of my decision, was the marketing. A lot of people think traditional publishers do the marketing for you, and that's just not true. No matter which way you go, the author does the marketing. And when I was done looking at that, I decided really the only difference between indie publishing and traditional publishing was the size of the royalty check at the end.
And as I understand it, according to the size of the royalty check, the author gets about 10%.
From a traditional publisher, yes.
From a traditional publisher, as opposed to going out on your own, that whatever happens, if you're on Amazon, for example, and you sell 70 or 100 units, you get about a 70% return. So
right.
It's a really interesting kind of balance. Now, here in Canada, we have a very much smaller. My son likes to say about Canada, oh, yeah, it's that country that has no population in it. He lives in the States. So
yeah.
He's used to everything big with lots of people. We've got a very, very short break coming up right now, Angela. But this is a fascinating discussion, and you clearly know your stuff. I can't wait to come back. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll be back with Angela Chrysler in just a few minutes.